garbage is, like, not necessarily accessible.
It's more than 5 feet. We'll drive there.
Yeah, so Bill's is a block and a half from my house, like, literally a 43-second walk. So, Mr. DJ is like, why don't we fucking drive?
Yeah.
Why don't we get bundled up and drive?
Yeah.
And I said, because we have legs and can do left, right, left, right, left, and get there in less than a minute.
To which I replied, we live in fucking Canada, and it's winter. If it's more than 5 feet, we drive it.
Absurdity. I don't appreciate the absurdity, so we walked.
We did walk.
And the pizza was just as delicious. Even though there was insinuations that the pizza would be frozen upon arrival, which is fucking bullshit.
I think there was
I think
there was a hint of coldness. A hint of chill in it.
Halo headshot confetti. Yay!
That's only if they have Grunt birthday skull on.
I know.
Fucking everyone. Yay! Yes, that's what they don't have.
Confetti, yay!
That's what they don't have in Halo 4 multiplayer.
I don't really know.
Why it's so much better. I don't have to fucking hear every lame ass that I fucking headshot go, yay! As much as I like that sound, confetti. as much.
Confetti, confetti.
Okay, audience, welcome to Completely Unoriginal Episode 3. I'm your host, Steve. I got my friend Kerr here. You know what? If you were listening to Episode 2, welcome back.
Hello,
I'm
everybody.
Gonna continue on this Halo discussion right now. The thing I like about Halo 4.
The thing I like about console gamers.
Okay, the thing is, back in Halo 2 when you found the Grunt birthday skull, right?
It's yay! Like,
exactly, it was fun, it was great. Fucking great.
Confetti,
Halo 3, Bungie brings it back. In Reach, they bring it back, but they make it in multiplayer matchmaking so that you can actually buy it. So that your player, when he dies upon death of a headshot.
Every time.
Yay! Yes,
confetti,
yes.
Yay!
Yes, it's fucking cute. The problem with that is they made it so few credits that you needed to buy it so that every fucking player had it. And at some point, when you're
playing... Welcome to herpes.
Exactly. At some point when you're playing the game, you hear off in the distance. You don't even have to be near them. You hear off in the distance, hey! And it's like, Jesus Christ, I am so sick and tired of fucking hearing that noise that you made me hit it.
Something, praise Lord, baby Jesus.
Something 10 years ago, not 10 years, but 6 years ago, mm-hmm. between Halo 2 and Reach,
yes.
6 years ago, that I loved... Mm-hmm. That made me happy, that I enjoyed putting on during Firefight and ODST yes. and fucking headshotting the grunts and having them go, yay! You have reduced it to me fucking wanting to stab you through that microphone because of the fact that it was overused and every player had it.
Fantasizing about physical damage to people he has never met before. Noted.
Thank you. The successes of Halo 4, they didn't let that shit happen. See, 343 Industries did a good thing where they were like, you know what? We're going to have customizations. We're going to have armor. You're going to be able to make loadouts. All great things. All great progressions that Halo definitely needed. They took stuff...
I agree with those. The avatars are fucking wicked.
They took elements that new FPSs use, such as Battlefield, COD. Yes, they took those. They took those elements and they brought it in. And they brought it into Halo and they were able to fine-tune it and make it work for Halo. Bonus of that... Made it customizations like all Halos. You can customize your armor. You can customize loadouts, like I said. You can have gun skins if you pre-order it. And they were able to make it so you took out those effects. They didn't have the birthday skull effect, which makes me a lot happier. Because I didn't even notice it before until you brought it up. You just brought that up to me. And I was like, I haven't heard that fucking noise in months. Since November 6th, since Halo 4 has been out, I have not heard that noise. And it dawned on me that I haven't heard that noise because it's not in the fucking game. Except for if you
so
put it on.
The most massive improvement of Halo 4 was the reduction of a screaming little girl with confetti upon the death.
It was actually children.
Of certain, whatever.
It was children.
Upon the death of certain units.
And no.
Aren't console gamers so cool?
Okay.
Wow, we got rid of a little girl screaming and confetti. Isn't our game advanced?
Okay, no, you know, if you're gonna knock it, I'm gonna give reasons upon why it is so great and it has come a long way.
Because all I see is the tip of my gun, like the head of my dick, and I shoot at everything. Yay, FPS!
Yes, it is a genre of gaming. It is a genre of gaming that has skyrocketed for the past 10 years.
Yeah.
It has become one of the most used genres. Like a trip.
It's so easy.
It's easy to make. The problem is perfecting it. That's the hard part.
It's getting a storyline that people give a fuck about.
Yeah. Well, it's not... No, it's not just story. It's game mechanics. A lot of games, first-person shooters, they go into it thinking, oh, yeah, we can do this properly. They fuck their game mechanics up so badly that you can't fucking play the game.
The only FPS game recently that's come out that I actually give a shit about was Dishonored, and it was because it was more of a rogue-style game rather than just, like, COD or Battlefield. Anything that is, like, modern warfare, honestly, I have a complete disinterest in because I don't think it even needs to exist.
Well, I think okay, going to COD 4, that was a good game. I don't really like Call of Duty. I'm not a Call of Duty fanboy. Fuck Call of Duty. That's how I feel. But I will have to say Call of Duty 4 changed a lot of things. They did things right. And the problem with that is now every company is looking to those things and they're not progressing. They're not utilizing what they did right. They're just copying it. And Dishonored was one where they were like, we need to create a new IP. We need to create something new. So they did that. And they used story. They used these game elements. They took a few things.
They went Assassin's Creed meets FPS.
Exactly.
And then I will say, though, against the game, is that the linear aspect of the storyline was very frustrating, and that there were so many more things that I wanted to explore within the world, and just see, like, just see in that age that they created, see in that environment that they created, that just weren't, they were entirely impossible because of the linear style of the game. Whereas I think that the abilities of your assassin are so much greater than the storyline that they provided.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, exactly. I don't know what more to say. I was going to go into, yeah. I was going to go more into defending.
Because, like, I wish that they had made Dishonored more like Far Cry 3, which is what I'm really excited for when they come out with the new Lara Croft game that's coming out.
Tomb Raider?
Yes, they've made the Tomb Raider game a seamless environment, as they did in Far Cry 3. Which I think is going to be fucking wicked. You get to witness Lara, like, stumble across her first, like, mutilated body upon which she finds her bow. And she learns to shoot upon, like, prey of the jungle. And, like, how she comes to be Tomb Raider. This is before she is Tomb Raider. This is Lara Croft.
It's a reboot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now,
I think this is so necessary.
Okay, if you don't know yet, I might as well tell you. And I'm looking for your opinion. I'm pretty sure... I think it was this game, yeah. They confirmed multiplayer.
How do you feel about that? I have no idea how to take that, actually. How do you feel about that? Because isn't everyone Lara?
No, it'd be like competitive multiplayer. Like, example, this new Tomb Raider...
Create an avatar as you do in Halo?
No. This new Tomb Raider, it's taken a lot of things from Uncharted.
Yep.
And Uncharted, of course, since Uncharted 2 and Uncharted 3 have multiplayer in them. And I think the multiplayer would be a lot more like that. Where it's competitive.
I've never played Uncharted.
It's competitive multiplayer. Whereas you're not necessarily Lara Croft or whatever. You can be like, I don't know how they're gonna do it.
Like Borderlands.
Maybe, but it's not part of the story, right? It's competitive multiplayer, so it's a different side of things.
Yeah.
And I think they don't need to go that route on some of these games. Some games just need to have a good story, a good single player experience. You don't always have to shoehorn in these multiplayer experiences just because that's the status quo now.
I totally agree with that.
Like, take a lot of Nintendo stuff. Legend of Zelda.
Ocarina of Time, pinnacle game.
Exactly. Exactly.
The Hyrule Compendium that's coming out at the end of this month. Letterbound Edition. Must achieve.
But take what Nintendo's doing. There's Super Mario, Legend of Zelda. They realize that not a lot of those games need multiplayer. A lot of times it's a single player experience. It's a story.
If you're compelled to be invested in the character, you don't give a shit about versus other people.
Exactly. That's what I think a lot of people need to realize with the gaming industry. And game developers need to realize that I know their publishers are doing it. I know EA and Activision are saying, no, you guys need this because all these other games, that's the status quo now. You need multiplayer. But I think there should be a stand where you say, no, this game can be perfect as is. We don't need a multiplayer in it.
Welcome to Kingdoms of Amalur. Which I will give credit to Xbox 360. So this is the story of basically these gnomes that have found the soul well, and they've been trying to, like, reanimate bodies, and you are finally the one character who exists in this realm of Amalur where everything is governed by fate weavers, and you don't have fate. You're the only person in this universe that has no fate, and everyone's flipping their shit about it. Because everyone else in the world has cards that give them their fate, and everyone knows what their own fate is. You not only do not have a fate, you also can fate weave. So you are fucking shit up. you, like, start in the world of, like, the humans, and, like, you have, like, four races. There's a lot of interface changeability, or, sorry, not interface, avatar changeability at the beginning, especially when you meet your maker, I suppose, who, quote-unquote, dies at the beginning with the destruction of the soul well. But once you conquer the human lands, you advance into the Fey lands, where you discover the larger plot of Kingdoms of Amalur, which is basically that the Summer Fey versus the Winter Fey, and that there's a king who has the fault again of hubris and wants to take over. So you, without fate, have the chance to overthrow what he's about to do. And this game, the graphics are a lot like Fable, but the combat is even more seamless in that, like, B is a roll, like, B is a side roll, and then you have secondary primary on X and Y, so you can just go arrow, 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 and you don't have to reload. You, depending on what skill points you have invested in, your reload is so fast or so slow, and so many max arrows or so many minimum arrows. And then you have magic, which as soon as you pull right trigger, then X, Y, B is your mana.
Okay, I have to stop you there.
And you have new weapons, which are chakrams. They are, like, mage weapons. They are circular discs that are thrown in circular patterns around your body.
That control scheme, the R for magic, the X for sword, whatever, the Y for... That sounds a lot like fucking Fable 1's control scheme.
Doesn't it, though? And wasn't that game revolutionary?
That game was fucking amazing. The problem where they fucked that series is with number 2 and number 3. Making it simple control layout.
Yep.
X, sword. Y, fucking bow. B, magic. That's it. They fucked up.
Yep.
So you're telling me there's a game out there that has Fable 1's control scheme.
Yay!
And it plays well?
Yep. No, honestly, the game is fucking... I will say, though, that as expansive as the universe is, it's probably about the same physical size as Skyrim. The amount of quests and the amount of explorability as Tamriel is not even, like, comparable. In the fact that, like, you can only jump off certain cliffs, you can only run around certain edges, but it is in such a way that you don't have to complete any quests to level. You can sort of align yourself whatever way you like. It's very similar to the original Fable. And it's fucking awesome because of that. And when I finally got my friends to watch the game trailer for it, we promptly entered a vehicle and drove to EB Games and purchased it and came back and played it for the next 3.5 hours. It was good times. My Dolkafar's name is Naya, and she's...
What's a Dolkafar?
There are two elven races. There's the light elves, dark elves, Dolkafar and Lochtafar. And then there's two other humanoids. One's sort of like a marine and one's more like a pirate. Yeah, and that's basically how they span out. You can go male, female. You have a lot of options as it goes for, like, hairstyles, tattoos, facial structure. When it goes to creating your own fate, you pick cards, and you'll spec either, like, assassin, rogue, might, which is, like, melee, plate mail, or you'll go sorcery. And it's fucking wicked, and you can respec whenever you want.
Wait, what's respec?
Like, you could, if you say you went all might and you wanted to go sorcery, you could respec and you could pick your different cards, like acolyte. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then there's blacksmithing, like herbology, so it's like Skyrim in that sense that you can do sage crafting with jewels, you can create your own armor, you can create your own weapons, create your own, like, potions, you can detect hidden objects. So, like, if you're just wandering in the map, it'll appear on your mini-map as, like, a circle, I believe. Circle or an X. And when you go up to, say, a pile of rocks, it will begin to glow and your controller will vibrate. You hit R and it will, like, throw the rocks away and you'll find a chest. If you have invested in that skill.
Wow.
Like, this game is unreal and the environments are crazy. It's, like, it's literally like the world of Middle-earth. No, it's more like the world of Pandora. When you start to explore it, because of how, like, luminescent certain things are. There's even plants that will respond to the fact that you can control the powers of fate, and they will illuminate blue, like, they will go electroluminescent as you walk into certain caves, guiding your way through them.
I did not picture that at all. The way you made it sound like it was just, I can't think
very
of
very basic word. Fantasy
art. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Electroluminescent lighting, though, that reminds me of a game. It's called Dear Esther, and it's for PC, and it's probably one of the most original games I've found in a while. I think it's actually maybe a year or two old, but I only recently discovered it. It has no interface. You don't have any enemies. All the game is a journey from the bottom of a hill to a lighthouse. But the way that you get there, you can go so many different paths. And each path will give you a randomly generated piece of dialogue.
Is it like a point and click, or how do you play it?
You use your WASD, like WASD for motion, and then you use your mouse to view things, and you can click. All you can do is zoom in and zoom out. But the point is to get to the lighthouse, and it's the whole game is a cathartic dealing with grief. It's supposed to be like a game that allows you to deal with death or deal with grief in your life. And it's these letters that this man has written to his loss, which is Esther, and it's all about Dear Esther, and he talks about, like, bottomless paper boats that float out into the sea, and, like, when you walk by the shore, it's just the imagery in this game is fucking amazing. Like, it literally had, like, my friend and I, and who is, like, 22 years old, male, like, both bawling, like, literally just silently crying as this game is progressing. And at the end, like, your character just, like, climbs up to the very top of this lighthouse and jumps off.
Wait, like, to kill himself?
Yeah, because he has to find Esther, and at the end he just says, like, I miss you. And it goes dark. And it's literally, like, the most powerful game I've ever played. And I mean, like, I've read books where I've been crying, I've played games where I've been crying, but this game had such a cathartic effect. By the time you were done, the game only takes about an hour and a half, and there's four different dialogues that you can get, and four different pathways that you can take, and I mean, you start on, like, the base of sort of, like, a beach with, like, the sun in the sky, and, like, it's an okay day, but then you make these travels into caves that are underground, with, like, electroluminescent paint covering the walls and, like, these waterfalls, and then you finally make it up to the dark top of the cliff, and, like, you can't even help yourself. You crawl up to the top of the lighthouse to hear the rest of the dialogue, and you just die. You die, and it fades to darkness, saying, like, Esther, I miss you. And, like, this game is mind-blowing. This game is mind-blowing, and, like, I just don't feel that there's any, like, the PC gamings are just so far superior to most recent console gaming. I will give so much credit to N64 and, like, some original Xbox games or some original PS games, but since PS2 or Xbox 360, the real game content in a one-player game has just gone down the fucking shitter. There's not as much investment into the storyline.
I will agree and respectively disagree. Yes. Because there have been some games that have come out on these generation of consoles that have just fucking changed everything. One of them being one of my all-time favorite, BioShock. Have you played this game?
With the Little Sisters?
Yeah, with the Little Sisters. Have you played it?
I haven't played it, but I've watched it and played.
Okay, BioShock 1. If I had to recommend a game to anyone, and I have done this before, I'll say, you want a good story? You want something that'll make you fucking think by the end of it? BioShock 1. All I have to say when I talk about this to someone is golf club scene. Because what happens is... Do you want me to spoil
it? Yes, please. Please spoil
okay,
it.
Okay, so...
Is this PC?
I think you can play it... Actually, I don't know. I know it's Xbox 360, PS3, but I'm not sure if it's PC.
I feel like you could play it on Steam Engine,
yeah,
but we'll see.
Probably. But to those who don't want to be spoiled, you know, fast forward or something, but this game...
Spoiler alert!
Yeah, this game needs to be fucking played. And I can't wait for BioShock Infinite to come out, because that's going to revolutionize a lot more, too. So, basically, this game, you go through, and you're this guy on this plane, and it shows you a picture of your family, and it's like, okay, I'm going to visit family. Oh, shit, plane crash, it goes down into, like, this ocean, right? And there, you find out, there's a city, and it's Rapture. And through a radio, you hear this guy named Atlas. And he's, like, trying to help you. He's like, go through here, do this. He's like, would you kindly do this? You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, he's trying to help you.
He's your Alfred.
Exactly. He helps you along the way. And so you progress through the story. And what happens is you can search through things. Like, you search through trash cans, and you can explore a lot. even though it's an FPS. It's got, like, kind of
like Skyrim.
Or Fallout.
I never played Fallout, okay. But Skyrim has, like, the RPG elements of an FPS game.
Yeah. Well, Skyrim and Fallout is the same developer.
Okay.
So it's like that, where you can explore a bit, and through that you can get these tapes. And these audiobooks will play. And what it is it shows the story of a guy named Andrew Ryan. And Andrew Ryan is the person who created Rapture, and that's the place you're in. And he saw it as, it's like a weird 30s or 60s, I can't remember. Mm-hmm. But back then, he's like, well, I'm going to take all these geniuses and, you know, fuck society. I'm going to build my own utopia. And so he built his own utopia and he called it Rapture. And it's under the sea. And it was just a bunch of geniuses and they could do whatever they want. No limits. They could play gods.
So it's just a utopian society that's been created underwater where genius is in the fact of science are in control. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
And Andrew Ryan, he's at the top of it.
Yep.
And so what happens is you find out while you're playing through this story that's going on right now, while you're playing through it, you find these logs, and it details another story of the downfall of Rapture and what happened. And it gets to a point where your character is so against Andrew Ryan that through the story, you go and you see these little things, and you see, like, how Andrew Ryan has, like, experimented on children and stuff like that, and you find all these little details. And it gets to a point where you finally meet Andrew Ryan. He's still alive, which is weird because this world is filled with, like, Rapture is filled with splicers and big daddies now. And splicers are, if you don't know, in the game, you can take this stuff, gene tonics or plasmids, and it makes you, like, shoot electricity out of your hands and stuff. It changes your DNA.
For a period of time?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And what happens is people got addicted to that, and so it messed with their minds, right? So you have all these psychopaths in this world around you.
Mm-hmm. And it's like Arkham Asylum. It's very intriguing.
Yes, yes, exactly. And so you get to this, you finally get to a point where it reaches a climax where you're face to face with Andrew Ryan. And you find out through your entire adventure, you as a player have just been fucking played. Through this story.
Whoa.
Yeah, through this story, you find stuff on the wall like, would you kindly, and you find out about the story of this kid who's been brainwashed to be a slave, to do whatever someone wants, just by the phrase, start of a phrase, would you kindly? And so it shows you flashbacks of things that you've done, and every time fucking Atlas tells you something, he always mentions, would you kindly please lift that? Would you kindly go over here? Would you kindly follow that person? Would you kindly? And you as a player fucking feel betrayed, because you have now been used. You feel like, oh, I've been playing a game. Oh, this game's awesome. I'm invested in this. Oh, this story's amazing. Wait, what? Like, you have just fucked with me. I've been used. And what happens?
It's an excellent turn of events.
Exactly. It gets even better because you find out Andrew Ryan is your father. Your real biological father. You're his son. And Atlas, who you find out is really Fontaine, who's a rival of Andrew Ryan, tells you, oh yeah, basically you're going to have to kill him. And then Andrew Ryan's like, he gives you this one line that, if you know the game, you'll quote this line always. And Andrew Ryan says, a man chooses, a slave obeys.
Mm-hmm.
And so Andrew Ryan himself says, would you kindly grab that golf club? So then you have to grab the golf club. You have no choice. Your character goes and grabs the golf club. And then Andrew Ryan says, would you kindly kill me? And so your character's just like, and then Andrew Ryan's like, remember, a man chooses, a slave obeys. Would you kindly kill me? And so your character, suddenly you're watching yourself and you can't control it. You're not pressing anything, but your character is just beating your father that you just found out about, bloody with this golf club. And your father, Andrew Ryan, keeps yelling out, a man chooses, whack, a slave, whack, obeys. And you just beat him and you kill him and you kill your father. And you, as a player, feel so
worthless.
Exactly. You feel demoralized. You feel like,
yeah,
it's not just a game. You, yourself, have been affected by this.
That's intense.
Exactly. And that's, like, only the climax of it. It's not even the end of it.
Yeah.
Because then you have to go and fight Fontaine, where you find out all the shit that's happened that, like, you, even the plane crash, that was all a setup. That was supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
The memories that you had before of you being Jack, you lived on a farm with your parents. Those were all memories implanted. And your real purpose that Atlas and or Atlas slash Fontaine.
I feel like this was 100% a PC game first.
No, it wasn't. Exclusive to Xbox 360 first, and then a year and a half later, it came to PS3. It was Xbox 360 first.
All right, I give props to that then. But it was the same producers as Skyrim.
No, 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 no. Oh. No, this, the ones who did this one, it was, now they go by Irrational Games. Back then it was like 2K Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And this game just...
Didn't they do Portal?
No, 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 Valve.
Okay.
Portal is Valve. But Irrational, when they did Bioshock 1, it flipped people's minds. Because it was a single story. It was just a single player story, right?
Yeah.
And the way it played, it affected you as a person. And then what happened is a sequel was announced, Bioshock 2. And instead of having 2K Boston do it, which was Irrational, they had 2K Marin or a different 2K do it. And it was okay. It was close. Like, it was set in Rapture again. But it didn't have the same motivation that Irrational was able to do with Bioshock 1. Mm-hmm.
Well, like, that's honestly what I found that happened, like, up until they released Ocarina of Time for Legend of Zelda. Because, I mean, I will give a lot of credit to Majora's Mask, but then when they went to GameCube and released some of their other...
Twilight Princess and... Wind Waker.
Wind Waker, honestly, I didn't mind Wind Waker because of the graphics. Like, I thought it kept...
You liked the cel shade?
I liked it because it reminded me a lot of N64 graphics. And, like, that's what I liked about Ocarina of Time, was that it wasn't about the graphics. Yeah, the story was, like, yeah, they mashed it, but the story was massive. The Land of Hyrule was massive.
At the time, though, you can't say, oh, it wasn't about the graphics. At the time, those were the best graphics, though.
Yeah, so, like, I don't know. I preferred the graphics of Wind Waker over the ones of Twilight Princess because I lost interest in the story with Twilight Princess.
Really? Yeah. I never got into Wind Waker because I couldn't get past the graphics.
I just loved it. Like, I love that, like, simple, like, cell graphics.
Like, everyone who plays, like, man, this is, like, one of the best Zeldas. And I'm like, how can you say that? They just, they flipped on it.
Yeah.
No, everyone's like, no, man, you gotta play it.
Yeah, no, Twilight Princess for me was just too, it was too artistic in the visual sense. It wasn't artistic enough in the creative sense of the storyline. And, like, I don't know, I'm really stoked for that leather-bound compendium to come out, the Hyrule Compendium, this month. Because I'm going to see how they tie all the history in.
The timeline?
Yeah.
Have you looked it up?
No.
Oh, I've watched...
I want to read it, like, with my eyes and my hands touching the paper.
Game Trailers TV, they did a half-hour segment on the entire timeline of Legend of Zelda from the compendium. And I watched it, I'm just like, this is so amazing. And, like,
I know, I'm so stoked.
Three different timelines and how it all... Oh, man. It's good. It's really good. To actually... For Nintendo to actually say, oh, yeah, we've had this timeline all along. We've actually had a timeline for Zelda's, even though it feels like there isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And to come out and finally bust it out and say, boom, bitches, shut up. I know you've been trying to solve this. I know some of you say, oh, there is no timeline. Shut up. There's the timeline. This is how we've all had it planned for the past fucking 25 years. This is how each game fits into this thing. It's just fucking amazing. It's
satisfying.
It is, yeah.
Thoroughly, thoroughly satisfying.
Exactly. But yeah, I am excited about Bioshock Infinite. Because with Bioshock 2 not being Irrational, during the time of Bioshock 2's development, Irrational Games went on to create Bioshock Infinite. And what they did with that, it's not necessarily a sequel to Bioshock. They use the name Bioshock because they incorporate a bunch of things, like the game elements of it are the same. But the setting is completely different. You're not in Rapture anymore, you're in a place called Columbia. And it's in the sky. And it's like all these these balloons, and there's like this huge utopia in the sky. And through that, again...
Well, from one dystopia to another dystopia.
Exactly. But the difference was... The difference is, Rapture was all about being free scientifically, doing what you want to be a god.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Columbia, it's more about American pride. You see all these American flags around. It's like patriotism to an extreme.
Yeah.
And the whole point of this one is, like, you have your friend Elizabeth that you're trying to protect. Her name is... You're an agent and you're, like, Booker DeWitt, I think is your character's name. And you have to follow... Elizabeth around to protect her, and she's got all these weird powers and stuff. And then the incorporation of her isn't the same as what other games would do, from what I've seen. Most games would have, oh, I have to follow her, she's gonna get in the way, that AI is fucking stupid, right? And this one is like, this AI...
Like Resident Evil.
Yeah!
Ashley, I think her name is.
Yes!
Valentine. Most useless, most annoying fucking AI ever.
I hated her. I hated her. Wait! I'm gonna come. Wait! I think I'm gonna come. Fucking Ashley. Oh, you're dead now. Yeah. Now I have to start over.
Yep.
Fuck.
Yep.
Yeah, so I am... Like, they pushed the game back so many times. Like, it was supposed to come out March last year, and they pushed it back so many times that I have faith in Irrational to fucking blow your minds with this game.
I don't know. Honestly, it just comes down to the point for me that any console game I get very bored with very quickly, because you're limited by the controller.
I'm different.
You're limited by the amount of buttons on the controller versus the amount of, like, the amount of accessibility that a keyboard and a mouse offers versus two analog sticks and some buttons.
I'm completely opposite. I can, like, force myself to start a computer game. For example, I bought Diablo 3 with some friends. We're like, yeah, we're gonna play it. Yeah, great. Fuck, every time I start a computer game, I play it. And after a while, I get really into it for a couple hours, a day, week, whatever. After that, I just lose interest in it. Most of the time, it's the fact that I'm playing it on a computer. It's using the mouse and keyboard and sitting in my computer chair. I can't stand that shit. It doesn't feel comfortable to me. I am a console gamer.
Okay.
I'm a console gamer, I guess, through and through.
From, I guess, the social environment of where you would find your PC to where you would find a TV with friends sitting on a couch, I guess, is different. But, like, if you actually want to be a legitimate gamer, improve your skills as a gamer, then you play PC. What requires macros. You play what requires knowledge of graphics generators.
I don't think knowledge of graphics engines. Like, I don't think what calls a gamer a gamer. I don't think what defines a gamer as to you solely
unless you're playing
PC.
D&D, if you're a console gamer, you suck my. Because, like,
no.
Paper and pen is how it really started. And then PC is where it progressed to.
But there's so many things...
Console is where it is stagnant.
No, there's so many things that console has taken over from PC to the fact that they progressed.
I don't see it. Like,
what are you talking... You just talked about Legend of Zelda and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's console.
Yeah, no, that's pure Nintendo.
Exactly.
And, like, I respect Nintendo for what they're doing, but, like, Xbox and PS3, any of the games that are on there, the PC versions are far superior.
Halo, no, it's not. Have you played Halo PC? Halo 1 for the PC was ported over by Gearbox, who do Borderlands and stuff like that. Mm. They're great developments, too. They're amazing. But if you try and play the port of Halo on the PC compared to the controller-based one that was actually fucking made for, you're going to get frustrated. Because it's not a game that was built for PC. And I think there's a huge distinction. Like, when they try and port games over, a lot of times it doesn't carry over properly. The game mechanics don't work so well.
Yeah, I suppose that when you're talking about, like, a game that was originally intended for, it's exactly when it comes down to, like, a BlackBerry. When kids try to use BlackBerries in the same way they use an iPhone or an S3, like, it's a business device. Use it for business purposes.
Yeah. So that's where I get a little heated when someone like you will say, you're only a gamer if you game on PC. Because the console gaming has progressed it.
I don't know, it's just so much different, but I just feel like it takes so much more intense knowledge and skill to play a high-level PC game than it does to play a high-level console game.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that. It does take a little bit more skill.
You have to know your character, you have to know the mechanics of the game, you have to know... I don't know, I feel like you just have to know so much more about the story, about your unit, about everything to do with the game than you do when you go to a console. Like, you grab a gun and you shoot. If you know how to aim, you can kill someone.
I think that all depends, of course, on the specific game you're playing and the type of player. Because you can get hardcore in almost any game. You can look into the game, you can look into how the game's created, and find these little things to make the game better that you can do on any of those PC games that you're talking about.
But I mean, in Warcraft up to Burning Crusade, like, if you fucking knew your unit and you knew the mechanics of other units, some new character was simply not going to kill you. you had to build yourself as a unit in order to be able to defeat higher caliber players. Whereas now, I can log in as a guest, and if I don't know how to aim a gun, I'm gonna kill a rank whatever the fuck in COD or Halo, because I happen to get a couple lucky headshots. Like...
Okay, yeah, yeah.
I just find that there's a lack of...
But that's all defining...
Building. There's a lack of,
but
like...
But you can't do that investment in first-person shooters. How are you able to do that? Like, how are you able to take that... Like, take... You're comparing...
Well, if you go into games like Chivalry now...
Well, you're comparing World of Warcraft to, like, an FPS like Halo or Call of Duty. You can't do that,
but
because it's
different. Chivalry.
It's completely different mechanics.
There's Chivalry that has very similar mechanics. It's not a ranged fighting game as Halo is with gun, but it is an FPS game. And I mean, Halo has elements of melee fighting with the sword, or with stickies, or with just the blunt trauma of your weapon, which is an insta kill. And Chivalry
only in the back of the head.
Yeah, and Chivalry is a game where it's medieval weaponry, it's medieval warfare, and it's first person, and you're defending or attacking a city that is under siege. And so, like, if you've played your character fall, you have better armor, you have better weaponry, you have better technique, and you will defeat a new player. Even if they get that lucky blow, you then your armor will protect you.
But that's, again, this is what I was talking about with my brother. Some of these games, I'll take Halo for example, the multiplayer, they create it like that in the sense to have ultimate balance. Because if you were to say, oh, I have an expert character with all these fucking armor, oh, I got a level 40 armor, I can't be defeated, whatever. How does that help a new player comes in a year later when the game's already released, boost up? How does it help them, like, continue playing if all they're going to play against is these high-level characters?
Can they not build their character in the one-player campaign?
No. Because that's the whole point of these. It's separate.
See, and that's the whole point of the PC gaming integrates that.
Well, I mean, most first-person multiplayer games, they'll give you, like, a credit system where it's all aesthetics, mm-hmm. right? And I enjoy that because that way there's a balance in the multiplayer gameplay. Like, yes, Halo 4 has changed things by adding loadouts where you can buy guns, you can create loadouts, where whatever you do in the game, single-player, Spartan Ops, or multiplayer, you'll get these credits. Or you get points. And then you can buy those points, or you can use those points to buy new guns for these loadouts. So in that way, they kind of... 343 has taken away that sort of balance that Bungie had, whereas, like, Bungie had it, everyone starts off with this gun, all the guns are on the map, go, actually fight, it's balanced play, you do as good as you are. And 343 has changed that to as, no matter how you play the game, single player or whatever, you'll get these points. And however you want to allocate those points into aesthetics or new guns to use, that'll ultimately help you in the multiplayer field. Because mm-hmm. then you're able to use the gun that you're fucking brilliant with. You'll have this loadout where, oh, I don't want to have these type of grenades. I'm better with these grenades. I can take those grenades in.
I think that's... a positive to what they've done to the game, 100%. Like, if you want to be a gamer and invest your time in this game, then you should be rewarded for it when you're playing a multiplayer game against someone who's just a guest user. You should have advantages in your unit, tactically, over someone that's just visiting at someone's mm-hmm. house playing on Player 2. Like, that shit rages me.
I agree and disagree. Like,
I just feel like console gamers don't get the respect, or sorry, PC gamers don't get the respect that they deserve.
Well, that's because, okay, take the average PC.
Because we're all just fucking geeks and nerds
exactly,
that are fucking internet
though.
Warriors on Reddit. Well, like, no, our games require so much more knowledge, so much more backstory, so much more time investment than fucking pulling the right and left bumper on our fucking controller. Period. Like, fucking cheers to that, bitches. Whoever else is a fucking level 70 hunter with me.
So, like, one guy named Freddy who's in, like, Philadelphia.
Well, I know Haleon if she's listening.
She's not.
Well, cheers to you, bitch. You're my idol.
Got really heated right there.
I just hate being put down for using a keyboard and mouse when it's actually way more intensive than using a controller.
Again, it depends. I can't compare them. I can't.
Like, I have to set up macros on my keyboard so that when I'm doing a 2.5 hour raid, that's one boss that takes 2.5 hours, not one guy that takes fucking one clip. Okay, so it's, like, way more intense.
Okay,
it has a lot of different cycles.
You're comparing fighting a player versus player to fighting a player versus AI.
No, you have AIs when you do your single story mode that takes a clip to kill, right?
Runs. In Halo, like... No, it depends on leveling. You play on Legendary, all skulls on, where you have, like, the Mythic skull on, as well as everything else. It's not one clip. You're fucked. You're clearly... You're gonna get owned. It takes... Doing that, I guarantee you, is as much frustrating as it is doing, like, a World of Warcraft raid. Like, it all depends on difficulty, right?
I don't know. Try, guaranteeing equivalency.
I'm guarantee. Try
a 25-man raid.
Try Halo 4.
Incorporating 5 groups on event chat.
It'll be just as fucking frustrating. Try Halo 4.
As doing a one player.
Halo 4, Legendary, all skulls on. You would rage quit.
Are you managing 24 other people?
No, you're not. You're managing yourself.
Then immediately you've just reduced the difficulty.
Try it. I guarantee you, you will
frustrate. Group dynamics, man. Group dynamics. Like, you can control yourself, and if you know what the enemies are doing, then you know what you have to do. But there's so much unpredictability when you add 24 other players.
But that's where the skulls come in. The skulls add different... Like, for example, one of the skulls, you only gain back shield or health by beating someone. You get shot. Oh, shit, I lost that. I have to beat someone. Oh, great, they're on Legendary. Oh, great, they've got, like, a Thunderstruck skull where actually... explosives will do more explosive damage. All these things change your environment and the way you play them to make it more difficult. You can't just run and gun like you think all FPS
are. Yeah, but literally apply all that to the boss that we're fighting, because as if there aren't buffs on that boss, and then factoring 24 other people.
I think the people make it easier. Try soloing the raid.
But people do solo raids, and it's way easier to solo a raid. If you get, like, you and two other buddies that are just fucking epic out.
Well, that's because... wouldn't it adjust the difficulty to that, then?
It's the same raid, regardless of how you enter the instance. But if you and your friend know exactly what you and your friend are doing, you're gonna slaughter everyone. Like the tag team in Halo on Team Slayer, when, it, like, your other teammates leave, and you're just like, yeah, okay, I'll just go 52-2 and fucking clean up. Because, like, the other people on your team make it more annoying because they'll pull enemies and they'll aggro people that you
they'll
don't...
feed them.
Yeah. That you don't fucking want there. Feed them. Feed them like League of Legends. Oh, my God.
That's one of the games I got into really early, and then Dota. Because it's a...
Dota ripoff.
Yeah. But because, of course...
Dota 2
of course,
is
gonna
be sick.
Of course, it's a PC game for me. I just stopped playing at one point. I don't know what it is. It's me as a person. I prefer the controller in my hands rather than the feel of a mouse and keyboard.
Yeah. I guess that is what it comes down to, and I just 100% prefer, like, left hand on keys, fucking whipping out, like, shift F, fucking alt G, like, just whipping out my shit, and, like, click, and you are already dead, as opposed to, like, mash, bumper, sticky, mash, bumper. Like, I'm not down for that. I'm not down. It's not finesse enough.
Well, that's not
for me.
Your genre.
It's not finesse enough.
I think it's just not your genre.
Even Kingdoms of Amalur, as expansive as that was, or as Skyrim on console, nay. Skyrim on PC, yay! Like, it literally just came down to, like, how much easier it was to switch between weapons, like, to do anything on PC was so much easier, like, gathering herbs, even, like, gathering the tundra cotton people, like, this shit was easier on PC. Just made more sense.
I can't do keyboards. Fuck keyboards. Just fuck them. I'm a kid who, since being five years old or 3 years old, I forget when I started playing video games. That young, I can't remember having a controller in my hands, having fucking
too,
a Sega Genesis with Sonic and using that. I can't.
Honestly, and how many hours did I invest in Zelda? How many did I invest in Diddy Kong, in Mario Party, fucking everything? But like. As soon as World of Warcraft came into my life, that was game over.
I think you set that up.
Because then I just got sponsored. And shit went uphill from there. My social life went downhill, but everything else went uphill from there. Life's good.
I like what
LG.
You did there.
LG, life's good.
You did that on purpose?
Of course I did. A fucking podcast. Everything's on purpose.
Most podcasts aren't. Most podcasts just, like, wing it. This entire podcast has just been wonged.
Well,
wanged. What would the word be?
We're wanging with the wine and cookies.
Winging? We have winged it. We flew. Yeah, we flew high.
I actually need to do that.
Eat a cookie? Mm. Oh, the other thing.
Get high like kites.
Oh, that's lovely.
I think so.
I think we're pretty much done with this podcast.
I kind of agree with that.
Yeah, not much more to say. You're pretty adamant about PC gaming being better. I'm more adamant about making you realize that it all depends.
I'm just saying, like, when it comes to graphics engines and everything, like, PC gaming is just so much more superior.
Well, yes. No fucking shit. You're dealing with a 5 to 6 year old console compared to the latest and greatest. Like a
10 year old console.
Well, what would be. Name a 10 year old console. Like, well,
Xbox 360.
That's not 10 years old. Xbox 360 is only 6, 7 years old.
100 up to 10. And,
well, that's why I'm hoping at this E3 they can finally reveal next generation consoles.
Xbox 720.
Hopefully. I don't know what they're gonna call it. They should call it 720, but
I don't give a fuck about what they call it. My PC will still trump it. Like, if I was ever to build a PC, like, it would trump it.
Well, of course, but that's because of the way technology progresses. You can't blame a. What do you want them to do? Upgrade the console every fucking time a new driver comes out? Like, yeah, a new graphics adapter comes out?
Yeah.
People.
They have DLC.
Consumers would not buy that shit.
DLC needs to just go for.
Think of how expensive it would be to keep upgrading an Xbox. Just because the latest and greatest tech comes out. It'd be ridiculous.
Yeah, so you are now admitting inferiority. I'm taking a toke.
No, inferiority in hardware, possibly, but you can't help that.
Inferiority noted. Peace, my niggas.
Okay, thank you for listening to this podcast. This was episode 3. If you're itching for more, you can go on to episode 4. It will most likely have my guest, Keely, who goes by the name Kerr, because, you know. Fuck it, why not? Again, thank you for listening.